From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of March 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the agricultural cash grains with Bruce Bostard at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Along the way today, we'll check in with Chris Hurt about prospects for a better year in the hog industry. And we'll hear what the weather forecast holds for yet today and the weekend. It all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Let's check the numbers as they settled up in Chicago for a Friday afternoon. Futures finished a bit higher for the day. Soft red up 11.5 cents in the nearby March contract. Settlement price at $6.70 3/4. May at $6.74 1/2, up 10.5. And July, $6.86 1/4, up 10.25 for the day. The hard red in Kansas City at $7.27 1/2 for the wheat, 13 cents higher. And the March corn futures today, $6.59, up 5.25 cents in Chicago. May futures, $6.55, up 1. July at $6.56 1/4, a bushel up 3/4. September corn at $6.04 1/2, up 6.5. And December of next year, new crop, $5.70, up 3.25 for the day. The March soybeans, $13.28 1/4, 11.5 cents higher. May futures at $13.33, up 10.5, and July at $13.40 1/4, up 10.75. August soybeans, $13.30 1/2, up 10 cents, and November futures, $12.98, the harvest month at 3.75 cents higher. Bean meal futures at $3.57.30, up 3.60. Soybean oil at $53.76, down 0.18 on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the April at $129.95, down a dollar. June futures were 85 cents lower at $127.27 1/2, and the March feeders at $158.10, down 47.5 in Chicago. April contract $161.32 1/2, down 45 cents in lean hogs on the afternoon. $90.42 1/2, up 22.5 cents in the April contract. May futures, $98.55, up 32.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures in the April contract at $106.68, down $2.16. Ethanol at $2.26, that's 0.4 cents lower. Natural gas up a penny and 0.2 cents at $2.47 1/2. And the heating oil for the day, or diesel fuel, at $3.20 6/10 cents. That's down 6 8/10 cents. Now the gold futures at $1,708.80, down $12.30. And the dollar at 79.4, that's up 0.61 on the day. The CRB index now stands at 321.17, down 3.15. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. Yet this afternoon, occasional rain, a few thunderstorms. That'll all happen before 3 p.m. Central Time, and then rain likely. Some storms could be severe with large hail, some damaging winds, so be careful out there. A high near 50 degrees this afternoon. Should be breezy with a south wind, or west-southwest wind, that is. At 18 to 28, they'll gust all the way to 41. Chance of precipitation this afternoon set at 90%, tonight a 30% chance of showers, that before 9 p.m. Central Time. Mostly cloudy, a low of 30 degrees. It'll be breezy with a west wind at 25 to 28, decreasing to 16 to 19. The wind still could gust this evening as high as 41. And then tomorrow, partly sunny skies, a high of 39 degrees. It'll be breezy with a west wind at 16 to 22. Saturday night, cloudy and a low of 27. Sunday, a chance of rain, maybe even some snow. Mostly cloudy, a high of 38 degrees. And on Sunday evening, mostly cloudy, a low of 26. Monday, mostly sunny, a high of 42. Monday night, mostly clear, and a low of 31 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the forecast for the region when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo always joins us from his office in Lafayette, Indiana, the headquarters of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, so tell me about the weekend trade. It was another fun one.
It was. We had a nice week. Index fund buying entered the market. We had friendly technicals on some of the commodity index charts that were propagating or promoting the idea that if we could get some good demand news and get some good outside market news, that maybe the index funds would join the export market and the demand market as a whole and jump in on the buy side. We saw that. The ECB had some liquidity boosting to its markets. That helped the German stock market jump 17% now year to date. We also saw the Chinese People's Bank of China start to try and push money back into their economy by closing their open market window to their banks. These things all promoting the idea of pushing and injecting liquidity into the market, and I think that's what really helped the grains and industrial metals like copper. Steel had a very strong week, really a strong 3 to 4 weeks now in a row, Todd. So this week was one of those weeks where I think the commodities like wheat and corn that had been not participating in any kind of micro fundamental rally or currency-related rally like the beans and the meal have been, were able to join the party, so to speak.
They joined the party, and then there continues to be more news out of South America. Informa dropped out another number for the size of the Brazilian soybean crop today.
A lot of news out of South America late in the day and really turned the markets to the upside. I was not expecting a strong close led by the wheat, but you're right. The Informa numbers were friendly, Argentine, soybeans by dropping those, most importantly, friendly Brazilian beans by dropping those to 68 million tons. This last number, the 68 million tons, really kind of scratched off the negativity of the USDA agriculture attaché out of Brazil coming out two nights ago with a 70 million metric ton forecast. And I think that brought the bulls back in and caused the shorts to cover. The other thing that happened with Informa's numbers is they actually took both Brazil's corn and Argentina's corn production up a half a million metric tons higher than USDA's February numbers. Now, the other big thing that happened towards the close and I think really helped the March corn and really helped the beans was that we are seeing a port strike begin again in the Rosario area, the port of Rosario for Argentina by the Union, and that did not come to a good end. So they are on strike. Some people are talking about some Coast Guard people are talking about up to 57 ships not able to moor or dock at that port, and it's starting to get a lot of notice by the trade, as is the Brazilian logistics and the issues from the northern Brazil beans not being able to get to the ports as well. That's helped us be competitive with Brazil's beans pretty much all the way out to July. So these are logistical transportation issues that are on top of any supply-related issues.
Take me through a couple of things, old and new crop soybeans and the differences therein in the balance sheets, if there are any, and old and new crop corn and the differences therein that we are sure will be evident as long as we have a normal cropping year.
Well, I'll start with the corn. I don't think we're sure that we're going to get a doubling of the ending stocks. I personally think that the 1.2 million CRP acres that USDA is counting on is going to be relatively low-yielding ground. I think the trade has embraced the idea of the 94 million acres and a 164-plus yield with the thought, and I saw it on a tweet again today, we can't have three bad years in a row. And so I think we've priced this in, and that's why we have a dollar discount in December corn versus the July up until, you know, the spread correction at midweek. So I'm not in the mindset that it's a given with good weather that we can get both big acres and big yield. I'll feel a lot better about that statement if we have any planting delays whatsoever, whether in the Northern Plains, the Dakotas, Minnesota, or the Eastern Corn Belt. And that's one of the private forecasters that I work with came out with the spring weather outlook. Doesn't think the Eastern Corn Belt will be as bad this year as last year, but still is concerned there will be planting delays in that neck of the woods. So that's the corn side of it. I think to put it simply, I think the these corn is discount to the old crop because the trade is assuming a doubling of carryover. In the beans, I think we're probably looking at trying to need to feed the bull here. We've got a very tight new crop supply potential coming on board but very big and ample old crop supplies when it comes to the United States. Now, I went back and looked at the February report of last year from WASDE, and it, you know, we had about 165 million bushels of beans here in the United States compared to 275 right now, but the world number was 60.28 million metric tons currently versus 62.55 for world-ending stocks last year. So we essentially have 83 million bushels less than we did a year ago going into the March report. So between that and I just got off the phone with my Southern Brazil contact. He said, again, we've had above-average rainfall for the last 2 to 3 weeks. We're in excellent shape. We're good until April. I think we're probably entering a phase here not unlike 2008 and 2011, where we had a pretty sizable correction in early March after a very strong run in January and February. So I think as we get towards the report, one of the things I'll be talking about at the Beef House on the Bean Panel on Tuesday is as we get towards that report Friday, I think we're going to be needing to feed the bull either with new demand or with USDA cutting supplies bigger than we expect.
Can I take you back to some of your corn comments? Because I heard you say this twice, and I want to be sure that this is there may be a difference between now and September or the fall.
Sure.
So I heard you say the discount at this point in the old crop in December at $5.70 takes into account the 94 million acres and a high yield, or the 164.
And the new crop, that's right.
Yeah, the new crop, I mean.
Right, yep.
And that 570 is a good price on that particular venture. Does that mean if we get to September, October, and those are coming to fruition, that you think 570 is a correct price then too?
Well, I think that what I would like to see is a little bit more premium in the market to hedge closer to $5.85, $5.90, $6 area. I think what I'm getting at is that up until this past week, a lot of areas, especially out west, were actually trading the USDA average price in the new crop, and even at the end of this week, we're trading around $5.49 for I think Delphi here near my hometown, and I think we're probably up about 20 cents. So if you take that 20 cents out, we were trading about $5.29 for fall corn, only 29 cents from the USDA average price. I guess what I'm trying to get at is where is the premium in the futures market? What is the trade already tried to factor in and try and look 6 to 8 months out? Is that if we had any weather shocks, where would the premium need to be put back in? If we didn't have any weather shocks, where would the premium need to be taken out? I think it's very helpful to look at a monthly bean chart and realize that we could go all the way back down to 1150 and hold the trend, hold the uptrend, and that's not uncommon. In 2008, we went from 1450 to 1140 from March 3rd to March 20th. I know there's some outside market influences there, but here again, we've got some outside market issues this year. And just last year, we went from 1362 at the 1st of March down to 1238 by the middle of March. That was a 9% decline in new crop beans. So I think this is where I'm looking at this year. We just simply have more premium in the new crop beans than we do the new crop corn because the trade agrees with USDA that those acres and those yield for corn is going to be there.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, U.S. Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Margaret Hamburg says that if her agency does not get more money to implement the Food Safety Modernization Act, she can already predict an increase in foodborne illnesses and problems with imported food. The FDA is in charge of almost all food except for the meat, poultry, and egg products that are inspected by the Agriculture Department's Food Safety and Inspection Service. Hamburg says that the lack of funding is an enormous concern. Hamburg also noted the volume of food imports is rising and already amounts to 15% of the U.S. food supply, including 50% of fresh fruits, 20% of fresh vegetables, and 80% of seafood. USDA's Risk Management Agency yesterday set 2012 crop insurance price guarantees at $5.68 per bushel for corn and $12.55 a bushel for soybeans across most of the U.S. crop belt. The guarantees are down from the record highs in 2011 of $6.01 for corn and $13.51 for soybeans. Animal welfare groups reacted with outrage after the Iowa legislature made the state the first in the nation to approve a bill making it a crime to secretly get into a farming operation to record video of animal abuse. The groups have urged Governor Terry Branstad to veto the measure. Legislatures in seven states, including Illinois and Indiana, have considered laws that would enhance penalties against those who secretly record video of livestock. The Iowa measure would establish a new penalty for lying on a job application to get access to a farm facility. The White House next week will issue a 10-year national strategic plan for adapting to climate change aimed at research to help the government and the public respond to potential risks that could result from climate change, including more severe heat waves, storms, floods, fires, crop failures, and water shortages. The government next year will also release a national climate assessment intended to help government planners anticipate, mitigate, and adapt to changes in the global environment. Under a federal law passed in 1990, the government is supposed to submit a national climate assessment to Congress every 4 years. The last one was issued in 2009. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for Stock and Commodity Reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Please do visit our website. You'll find Commodity Week there after 6 p.m. this evening. Our guests in studio include Wayne Nelson, Paul Cooley, and Chip Nellinger. On the phone line today, Murray Wise of Murray Wise & Associates. Will talk about land values, of course. Now, up next, 5 years ago, people in the United States, on average, ate about 5 more pounds of pork in a year than they did last year. Purdue Ag economist Chris Hurt thinks that's about to change and that pork will soon be on the increase in U.S. diets. It's a little strange, but the numbers say that even while consumers in the United States were consuming less pork over the last 5 years, pork producers in the U.S. were ramping up. It's part of that push towards exports the Obama administration has been touting as a way out of the economic slump. Well, that also has a lot to do with the increasing taste for red meat in nations like China, says Purdue Extension Ag economist Chris Hurt.
There's a saying, China is going to eat your lunch. And that statement does have some limited truth. China was the sixth largest buyer of pork from the U.S. back in 2006, and that represented about 5% of U.S. pork exports. But now they've moved up to the third largest buyer, at least last year in 2011, representing not 5%, but 15% of U.S. exports.
China's recent history, says Purdue's Chris Hurt, has exhibited an inconsistent pattern of buying pork in the world market. As recently as 2004 to 2006, China was a net exporter of pork, selling more to the world than they purchased from the rest of the world. Since 2007, however, they have been a net importer, but an inconsistent one.
That inconsistency arises from them buying large amounts when they need pork, like back in 2008, due to internal pork diseases and, of course, the Olympics were in Beijing.
And the Chinese were big importers again in 2011 when pork price inflation was high and they needed to quickly increase internal supplies. That is to say that in-country supply wasn't enough to meet demand, so China bought U.S. pork. However, thinks Chris Hurt, the future direction of pork exports to China remains unclear.
Within China, the preference clearly has been to raise their own pork and only buy from the world market when their internal production is short. They certainly are rapidly increasing their production. So I think the race is on to see if they are able to increase their domestic production as quickly as their internal demand is rising.
What does it mean to the U.S. marketplace? Well, first, Japan is the number one importer of U.S. pork. It consistently buys about 30-35% of total production in this nation. Mexico is second. Last year, 20% of the U.S. pig crop went south of the border. These markets all are expected to stay strong in the future. It does not mean, however, less pork for U.S. consumers. On the contrary, Chris Hurt thinks pork consumption is poised to go higher in the good old U.S. of A.
That pork expansion will be brought on by strong profitability, which began back in the spring of 2011, and hopefully by moderating feed prices. Now, third supporting force will be the very low levels of beef that's going to be available for the next several years and into 2015.
Naturally, there is a caveat. It's the price of feed, corn, and soybean products. It's still dependent on a return to normal yields in the United States for the 2012 crops. For that reason, Chris Hurt says the pork industry should view 2012 as a transition year to those more moderate feed prices. That still depends on rebuilding corn and soybean inventories with more normal yields. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois, on the phone line with us to take a look at what's been happening in the world of cash crane markets. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Much movement there this week in the way of corn or soybeans?
Earlier in the week on the step-up days, we had some pretty substantial movement, both corn and beans, both old crop and new crop. When we took a step back, the door slammed shut, and today we popped back up a little bit, but didn't see new highs, so consequently a pretty quiet day.
Can I talk to you just a little bit about the futures price for new crop? So it's set at $5.70 this afternoon in December. Looking forward to new crop with 94 million acres, at least at this point until we get to the end of March, and 164, which it would be a trend line yield. That would give us, if USDA is correct, a 1.6 billion bushel carryout. I'm wondering if you think the trade really thinks there will be that much corn, and the only way it could be different is weather's different, and you can't really say something about that just yet, or carryout is much lower than it actually might be at this point, considered at 801 million bushels.
And carryout, you know, we've got two conflicting things here right now. We have potential decent exports and where we're going to finish the year out on the export front. And then we've got the whole ethanol situation, which is kind of a concern. You know, we got today where corn turns in a great performance with the dollar trade, in spite of the dollar trading higher, crude was off, metals were off. But you get those days where the corn is trading up, the crude is trading down, and ethanol, the production this week was at the lowest pace it's been for quite a while, and we still built stocks on it. It's you know, a little scary on what those plants' profitability is going to be going forward.
Okay, anything else before I get your bids for the day?
No.
Nope. All right, and your bids?
We are at 6.59 on corn nearby and 13.17 on the soybean.
Thanks so much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. We'll say goodbye to some of our radio stations now. For the rest of you, stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the Ag Weather Forecast.
It's National Mulled Wine Day. Mulled simply means heated or spiced. The wine apparently dates back to the Roman Empire during the first century of the rule of Tiberius. The recipe from then still exists today, and it includes honey, pepper, saffron, and date pits that have been soaked in wine to produce a soft mash. By medieval times, mulled wine was often preferred over water because it was thought to be more sanitary. By the 1500s, there were a number of methods for mulling wine, many involving honey and cinnamon. The biggest mulled wine punch bowl ever goes to British Admiral Edward Russell. who commanded a batch be made with 600 bottles of rum, 600 bottles of brandy, and several tons of boiling water. It was spiced with 200 pounds of nutmeg, 600 pounds of sugar, and the juice of 2,400 lemons. On this day in agricultural history in 1709, Andreas Sigmund Markgraf was born. A German chemist, in 1747, he extracted sugar from the sugar beet and determined it was identical to cane sugar. He used alcohol to extract the sugar, but his method did not lend itself to commercialization. It was not until 1802 that the first sugar beet refinery would be built. In 1797, the first patent for a washing machine was issued to Nathaniel Briggs. A fire destroyed the patent office, and no description of the device exists. And in 1879, Elmer McCollum was born. He was a chemist who discovered vitamins A, B, and D. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us from the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, state climatologist Jim Angel. Jim, thanks so much for taking the time. Let's go back through the month of February when it's all said and done. Where will it set in the history books?
That's right. If you look at February, probably no surprise, we ended up being above normal. We were about 4.6 degrees above normal for the month, and average temperature was 35 degrees across the state. And precipitation-wise, we're just a little bit below normal, 1.6 inches for the month there, and not a lot of snow. It was a relatively snowless month there, and that kind of wraps up the winter. You know, it's probably no surprise that it was one of the milder winters on record as well. And I just crunched the statewide numbers, and right now we're at the third warmest winter on record. That's the December, January, February time frame, and so it's going to go down as one of the milder ones in the record books.
Do you have top of mind what years one and two might have been?
That's right. If you look at the winters as a whole, that December through February time frame, 1931-32 was the warmest with temperature 37 degrees. We had a virtual tie between 1997-98 and the 2001-2002 winter. They were both at 34.5 degrees, and this winter was in third place with 34.2 degrees. So we were almost in a dead heat with 1997-98 and 2001-2002 there. So it was a pretty close match there. But the other one was head and shoulders above it.
Anything else that was pretty close? I'm thinking there's an awful long time frame between the 30s and the 90s.
That's right. You know, that, it is kind of a lump together like that. And, you know, I don't have that in front of me, but, yeah, there was a couple of winters there. And I think in the 1990s, I think there are also a couple other mild ones. But I think, those were the ones that really stood out as being the mildest of the mild, with both in terms of the temperature and also the lack of the snowfall as well.
Taking us through the weekend, starting this evening and through maybe Monday.
Yes, right now we've got a strong cold front that's going to push through Illinois, so the spring-like weather is going to go away for a couple of days. By tonight, temperature is going to drop down to about 30 degrees here in Champaign-Urbana. Tomorrow will be colder and breezier, but the skies will be clear. It will be high of 39, Saturday night, low of 27. A chance of snow and or rain on Sunday, and then it kind of clears off again on Sunday and Monday nights. There will be kind of on the cool side, below freezing. But then by the middle of the week, it will start to warm back up. In fact, the National Weather Service forecast, once you get out to the 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day, they're calling for above normal temperatures and above normal precipitation. So we'll kind of slip back into those warmer, wetter conditions after this weekend.
Hey, Jim, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is the Illinois State Water Survey State Climatologist located here on campus in the Prairie Research Institute. That wraps up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.